Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Welcome to the EAN Cast Weekly Neurology, the audio podcast hosted by the European Academy of Neurology. My name is Andrew Chan, and I am a professor of neurology and a neuroimmunologist at the University of Bern in Switzerland. So today we will talk about MS in children, something where I, as an adult neurologist, sometimes feel a bit uneasy. So therefore, I'm very grateful to have two experts on pediatric onset MS with me today. First, let me introduce Professor Barbara Korneck, who is a neurologist at the Medical University of Vienna in Austria. She's broadly trained also in basic science, and her current research interest is on pediatric onset MS within a multidisciplinary approach. Our second guest today is Dr. Fredrik Sandesjö from the Karolinska University Hospital in Stockholm in Sweden. He is a child neurologist with a specific interest in pediatric neuroimmunological disease, namely childhood MS, where he especially focuses on epidemiological aspects. So welcome, Barbara and Frederick. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Professor
Chan, for
the invitation. I'm looking forward to this interview.
Before we really talk about also your science and your recent publications, let us try to set the stage. Barbara, I have known you for quite some while as an adult neurologist. So why your specific interest in pediatric onset MS?
Yes, this is quite interesting, Andrew. After medical school, I joined Hans Lasmas and did basic research for a couple of years. And then I went to what was called at that time, quite many years ago, Department of Pediatric Neurology and Psychiatry. So I started my clinical training actually in children or in childhood neurology and psychiatry. And that was the time I gained interest in pediatric neurology and in particular in multiple sclerosis. And I had a mentor. She was expert in epilepsy, and she proposed me just to focus on pediatric and MS, and this is more than 20 years ago, I have to say, and at that time, very little was known on pediatric MS, and we soon realized that there is a large gap in neurology as well as in treatment options. We found out that the basic treatment is in most cases not sufficient for pediatric patients with highly active disease. So we were able to combine our experience in adult MS patients and use that for our pediatric patients with highly active disease. And we early started implementing also immunosuppressive treatment in those young patients.
Oh, very interesting. So really a long-standing history. So Frederik, you are a child neurologist, but why your special interest in MS?
Well, a good question. I am, as you mentioned earlier, interested in neuroimmunology in general. And I am part of the pediatric neuroimmunology team, both locally at my hospital, Astrid Lindgren's Children's Hospital at Karolinska in Stockholm, and nationally in Sweden. And obviously, MS is one of the main diagnoses that we handle. And I think the pediatric onset MS patients are quite a vulnerable patient group. And I think they need prompt care and treatment. And I think that we also have quite a lot to offer them, actually. And I've come to focus a little extra on this patient group, both at the clinic and in my research.
Well, thank you for sharing this with us. Now, as the majority of the audience probably are adult neurologists. So can you please introduce us into the pediatric onset MS? So what are the similarities, but also dissimilarities and differences between these two sort of entities? Frederik, do you want to start?
Yeah, I can try. So first, there are some similarities, of course. Risk factors and the underlying immune pathophysiology and the presenting clinical features such as optic neuritis and myelitis and these polyfocal attacks are pretty similar across all ages at onset. However, the clinical course in pediatric onset MS differs from that in adult onset MS in quite several aspects. So first, POMS, as we say, pediatric onset MS, abbreviated POMS, almost exclusively follows a relapsing remitting pattern in contrast to adults, where approximately 15% or so have a primary progressive course at onset. Correct me if I'm wrong. The second, POMS is more inflammatory with an increased relapse rate and a faster MRI lesion accrual. And third, and hypothetically due to the plasticity of the younger CNS, a slower disability progression is seen in POMS. And nevertheless, because of the earlier onset disability milestones, such as certain EDSS levels, are reached at a significantly younger age. Now, early in the disease course, POMS patients usually recover physically well between relapses, keeping the EDSS scores low, quite often at zero. But still, almost a third suffer from cognitive impairment during childhood and adolescence. And I think this is an important issue to address early.
Thank you. I think this was very important and helpful. Barbara, now the same question goes to you. What are the differences and the similarities? Maybe we can focus a bit on also treatment, because this is really highly important also in the context of our cast today.
I agree with Frederick in all points. And what matters most in those patients with early onset MS is long-term prognosis. In terms of physical disability, as Frederick said, young people tend to recover more quickly from relapses. However, on the long term, the impact of the nerve on the nervous system is more severe. So they tend to have fixed disability at earlier age. And in particular, we have to think about cognitive problems. As Frederick said, already in those young people, they have problems with memory, with cognition, executive functions, and this may interfere with school performance, for example. And that's what's not seen when you see the patient, but what matters mostly for the future life. And that's why treatment, early implementation of highly effective treatment is of utmost importance. So, I mean, I've seen an evolution during the last 10 to 20 years. At the beginning, we started with basic therapy because we didn't have any further treatment available. We still have the problem that there are not so many disease-modifying therapies licensed for pediatric MS. We have Gilenya, fingolimod, which is licensed for people below the age of 18, teriflunomide, tecfidera, but those more effective therapies are not are tested now in phase 3 trials, fortunately, such as ofatumumab and ocrelizumab. But regarding only the licensed drugs, we do not have so many options. So, however, all the trend in treating pediatric MS patients is implementing highly effective therapy early in the disease course. And since the immune system in those young patients is quite strong, it appears that we have less adverse events in terms of infections and so on.
Well, thank you very much, Baba. I think this was immensely helpful also for setting the stage, really, because we now would like to talk about your publications that were selected really for today's cast. So, Frederick, the one question to you is because you published more recently an epidemiological paper in the European Journal of Neurology. So what are specific epidemiological aspects that the general neurologist really should know and which were the background for specifically your study?
So pediatric onset multiple sclerosis is associated with high healthcare use. And to plan resource allocation for this patient group, knowledge of the incidence rate and prevalence is important. However, such studies are scarce, few are population-based, and the methodology varies widely, as does the estimates. A recent review reported incidence rates ranging from 0.05 to 2.85 per 100,000 person years, and prevalence estimates ranging from 0.69 to 26.92 per 100,000 persons. So we aim to address this knowledge gap by performing a nationwide study of the incidence rate and prevalence of POMS in Sweden, an area of high MS incidence and prevalence in the overall population.
Yeah, then let's move on, Fredrik. Your study, your important study, what are, in your opinion, the main findings and this sort of, how does your study advance our knowledge?
Okay, so we used two high-quality validated registers that are nationwide, and we use quite the stringent inclusion criteria. And these two registers, one is a clinical registry and one is an administrative. And we estimate the incidence and prevalence from 2006 to 2016. And just briefly in conclusion, the occurrence of POMS in Sweden was in alignment or slightly above that of other European countries such as Germany, the Netherlands and Denmark. The estimates remained relatively stable over time with no evidence of a decreasing trend. And I think to answer your question, how this advances the knowledge, I think that it's valuable not only for the Swedish health economy system, but also for planning and implementing clinical trials for pediatric onset MS, which are urgently needed.
Yeah, I think this is a very important aspect given that recruitment into these trials is difficult for the sponsors. Now, there's one question, Frederik. In the MS community, the Swedish registries are highly valued, and we have a lot of data which really had big impact on clinical activities and research. Why is it that a relatively small country or a smaller country like Sweden does have such high quality registries? Can you fill us in there?
I'm very grateful that we have these registries, but that's a hard question to answer in a good way, I think. One thing that I know is that this clinical MS registry is very well implemented in the clinical care. So it has very high coverage. I think that approximately 87% of the patients are covered by this registry. So maybe that could be one explanation that is well implemented into the clinical care.
Mm. Okay, yeah, I understand. So Frederik, when reading your paper, I had one question. So in late onset MS, we see an increase of incidence over time. So how about a pediatric onset MS? And do you have any data on sort of more recent intervals?
Yeah, so that is one thing that we specifically looked at in this study, which covered the time period 2006 to 2016. We could not find any evidence of any trend of increasing or decreasing either incidence rates.
And if you compare, I mean, you alluded to that with other countries, also surrounding countries, what would be your hypothesis on the somewhat differing and diverging results?
The results, I mean, the methodology varies quite widely because in some of these studies, they use like 16 years as an upper age limit for considered pediatric. And in some countries, it could be 19. And some of these studies are based on the age at onset and some at the age of diagnosis. So the methodology varies quite a lot. And some are nationwide population-based studies and some are just smaller studies.
Okay. Can you also comment on other potential drawbacks of your studies where you caution the reader?
Yeah, I mean, during the last 5 to 10 years or so, MOGAD has become more something we talk about a lot, obviously. And some of the patients diagnosed, especially early in this time period, would probably now have been diagnosed with MOGAD, I think. And we didn't really start checking for MOG antibodies until like 2016 or 17 or so.
Yeah, very important. So you alluded to that in the introduction of your paper. You say that resource allocation may be somehow changed because of your data. Can you sort of detail that a bit more? So what is the situation like in Sweden? Who would take care of it? 16-year-old, for example, in Sweden?
I take care of them. try to at least. And so mostly it's child neurologists, but some parts of Sweden, it's adult neurologists who take care of children with MS, depending on the access to child neurologists, I would say.
Okay. And so and resource think, allocation, of course, yeah, you need more resources.
Yeah, the resource allocation, I guess that's, I mean, it's important to know how rare this really is. I mean, we know that it's rare, but we didn't know exactly how rare or how common. So, I mean, if we can say now that we know that approximately one per 100,000 a year gets this disease, I think it's good for resource allocation.
Baba, can I ask you how you read the data of Frederick? What is, as an expert in the field, what is the novel part for you?
I mean, I think what has to be pointed out again is the high quality of the Swedish registries, which we have seen in several studies already, but we did not have so complete data on pediatric onset MS. And also the selection of patients where you required, Frederick, pre-MS specific ICD-10 codes in order to give the diagnosis of pediatric MS. So patients who maybe had ADEM before and then switched to pediatric onset MS were included while other ones were excluded. So you also had, in order to allocate a patient to the pediatric group, you had a longitudinal follow-up, which improves certainly the quality of the paper, and that the patients you included definitively have pediatric onset multiple sclerosis, which at the first relapse is not always clear. So to summarize the completeness of the Swedish registries, as well as the selection of patients, has a high quality, and it helps to know how, because there are not so many. We have a registry as well, but this is a treatment registry with safety issues. But we don't have such a in Austria. We don't have such a complete registry on MS as a whole. So this helps a lot in order to know also and to point out the high incidence and prevalence of pediatric onset MS. Because although this is a small group, it's an important group in terms of long-term outcomes.
Thank you, Baba, for your insight. So you delivered the keyword, the treatment registry. So let's come to your paper. What are your key findings and main takeaways from your study?
Knowing that Sweden has a very particular treatment practice, namely implementing anti-CD20 early in the disease course, we connected to our colleagues in Sweden, namely Frederick, who is shared co-author of our paper, and we also connected to Germany in order to give a multinational cohort of pediatric patients treated with rituximab. We all together had 61 patients included in a retrospective manner, with all disadvantages, of course, and biases of retrospective studies. But what was unique to our study is that we had a 69% of patients who were treatment naive when we started rituximab. This is not common. Coming from a lot of experience in the years before, where we had problems with moderately effective therapies, we switched our treatment approach, and the Swedish colleagues did the same already a couple of years ago. And I think the strength of our study is that we had quite a long a cohort with a median treatment duration of 21 months, and also including a lot of children and adolescents who are treatment naive.
And Barbara, so the main results of your studies, should I give as a neurologist, should I consider giving rituximab early, as you did?
Yes, I mean if you talk to people from all over the world who are treating pediatric MS patients, there is consensus on using highly effective therapies early in the disease course. The guidelines have not implemented that yet, but this will come up shortly, because we all are aware of the bad prognosis of pediatric onset MS. So the advantage in this young population is they are highly inflammatory and they respond quite well. So relapse rates dropped from 0.6 to 0.03. We did not have contrast enhancing lesions anymore. We did not have, we had a very few number of new T2 lesions, and you always have to check whether these lesions or relapses occur shortly after starting treatment or later on. And most relapses and new lesions, with all the problems of a retrospective design, were early after starting treatment.
But how about adverse events? I mean, this is a specifically vulnerable population. How about infections, hypogammaglobulinemia, all these issues?
We found hypogamma as a IgG decrease in 17% of patients. We found some kind of infections, but we did not find those severe infections such as severe pneumonia, neutropenia. We had some cases of infusion-related side effects, but the number of adverse events was low and balancing risk and benefit of the treatment. There is not only coming from this study, but from all other studies with anti-CD20 therapies, there's a, of course, this is in favor to benefit versus risk.
So one aspect which I find interesting is really, and you mentioned it before, so how does your cohort and the rituximab treatment compare to other, maybe even approved treatments in this pediatric onset age group?
I mean, there are no randomized trials on that. We had the PARADIGMS trial, which compared fingolimod to interferon beta, where it was clear that fingolimod was superior to interferon beta, and there's no data on comparing fingolimod versus anti-CD20 in the pediatric group yet. There are two trials ongoing, the OPERETA trial comparing ocrelizumab versus fingolimod and the NEOS trial comparing ofatumumab versus siponimod versus fingolimod. We are awaiting these results. Both studies are still recruiting, but we are awaiting these results during the next probably next year, the first results. And at least from our adult experience, as well as from our, of course, subjective impression, anti-CD20 is superior to fingolimod in the pediatric population.
Thank you. Very, very helpful, Baba. Maybe let's come to the final round of questions. Frederick, now that we understand that we should consider treating children earlier, also with highly efficacious medications, so what are typical red flags in the differential diagnosis of a child with a presumed MS? Where would you say be cautious and be aware and maybe even refer again to a child neurologist?
All right. So in the younger patient group, I guess, I mean, in our study, we showed that below 12 years of age, I mean, MS is extremely rare. And in this group, MOGAD is much more common. So if you have a young patient, I guess you should, that's a red flag that this is not MS and instead it's MOGAD. Also, we know that if you haven't had EBV infection, you are not that likely to have MS. So if you're EBV negative, I guess that's also a red flag that it's not MS.
Thank you very much. I think this is very helpful. Barbara, last question to you. So what would be your sort of take-home message for the majority of our auditorium, which is sort of certainly adult neurologists? So what, you know, should we take care of when we think about or even treat a childhood onset MS?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for this important point. I think we have to keep in mind that pediatric MS is not a benign disease, even when compared to adult onset MS. They start younger, they have more atrophy at the same age compared to adults, They lose time in school. They may have a problem with cognitive issues. They may have problems in finding their way in their professional life. So this is not a benign disease. And if we want to keep those people doing well in social and psychological terms, as well in their professional ways, we have to take care of them and treat them as early as possible, as well as in achieving, if possible, NIDA.
Thank you, Baba and Frederick. Really, this was a very interesting discussion. I really enjoyed reading your papers. I really enjoyed discussing the backgrounds with you. I think you really made your points very well. I recommend the listeners reading the publications. Very helpful. Thank you very much for joining us. If you did like this podcast, please follow us also during the next months with different topics. Please also recommend this podcast if you want. Have a nice day and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.